it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets. Now here are your hosts, Tim McMaster and Connor Hughes. Listen safely.
Can't wait!
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Can't Wait podcast. Thank you for joining us for the final week, the countdown, final days of the Adam Gase era as head coach of the New York Jets. Tim McMaster here, along with Connor Hughes and Marissa Morris. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to your podcast, or right here on YouTube if you're catching us live, and give us a five-star rating and review on Apple if you could do that as well. Lots to get to on the show, including mailbag. We'll do a lot of mailbag. A lot of questions came through Twitter. Throw them in the chat as well. We'll get to those. We'll talk a little bit about Gase's final game coming up and potential replacements for him after the season. The Sugar Bowl is coming up on Friday. That means Justin Fields taking the field one more time, taking on Trevor Lawrence. But we got to start here, Connor. It leaked out a few weeks ago on the show when we were actually, the whole plan was to make fun of Marissa for the fact that she's never watched Game of Thrones. And it kind of blew up to the point that it was a bigger deal that you haven't seen Star Wars, but you've taken upon yourself to correct that error in your life and start at, and I like the order you've chosen. So you're starting with, you did Rogue One and you did Episode 4, A New Hope, which is a good way to, good time to check in, because those movies almost butt up against each other, the way Rogue One ends and then A New Hope begins, even though they were made, what, 45 years apart? So what do you think so far? I mean, I will say Rogue One may be the best Star Wars movie. I know some people take that as sacrilege that it's not one of the original three, but it is a fantastic movie, a good place to start.
Yeah, that's what I was told. I put that one out on Twitter because I didn't know, as someone who has only seen the one where Darth Vader becomes Darth Vader on the, I think it's the prequel. So the Number three, where there's Obi-Wan and like Thor's girlfriend's in it and like all that stuff. Like I've only seen that one and like minor like lightsaber battles from the other ones that people say for me. So I didn't know like the proper way that you're supposed to go about watching these things. Like are you, when you watch them for the first time, like do you go chronological? So would I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9?
Definitely not.
That's what I thought. Like that was what I was originally going to go in and do. And I was immediately shot down by everyone on social media that said, are you out of your goddamn mind? And so they were like, no, you do 4, 5, 6, Mandalorian, then go 1, 2, 3. But I was like, I'm not watching all like the Mandalorian. Like we're going to, that'll come after the movies, but I'm not going through two seasons before I then go back. So what I settled on was that they said you start with Rogue One because that's like a good introduction to Star Wars. Like it's a good movie is what people said. Then you go 4, 5, 6. You can skip one if you want, or you can watch 1, 2, 3, and then you go like 7, 8, 9 is what they said to do. So I was like, all right, I'll do it in the order that they were released in, with the exception of Rogue. And I will say, I thought Rogue was an excellent movie. I'm not a Star Wars guy. I'm not like going crazy. It wasn't for me like a fanboy moment where I was like, oh my God, look at this. Oh, this is how this dot connects. So I went in like, this is the first real Star Wars movie I'm watching since middle school. And I thought that movie could like stand on its own. Like if that wasn't even tied to Star Wars and that wasn't linked to Star Wars and that was just a movie, I thought it could stand up as like, this is a legit movie. It was good. And then starting Episode 4, I actually really enjoyed that one too. Now, there were like questions I had when all this started. Like, I didn't know the Death Star literally blows up planets. Like, I didn't know that was a thing. And if you watched Episode 4, it makes that very clear right off the bat. Like, in that scroll thing, it's like, the Death Star blows up planets. I was like, oh, well, that would have been useful to know. Because the first thing I saw was like, I thought it just imploded them or created like a tidal wave, and like the tidal wave like hurt people. I didn't know what that was going on. But once I figured out that, it was good. But I thought Episode 4, and what's cool is Disney Plus has all those old movies up in 4K, Ultra HD 4K. So watching it with that in HDR and all that stuff, I thought that that was, that helped me like keep locked in. Cause you know, like you still see like the silly when they're shooting each other with these laser beams or whatever, and they like jump back and like all that stuff. Like that's kind of fake, but the fight scenes I thought were good. The flights weren't like so bad. Like the space stuff wasn't so bad that I was like, oh my God, this movie was made in the 20s. I can't handle this. Like it was good. And then there's like little things like it's crazy how young Luke looks. Like that's the wild. I didn't know Luke was going to look that young. That's pretty crazy. I was a little worried at how like he just brushed off his entire village getting scorched. Like the white soldiers, like the people in all the white uniforms.
Stormtroopers.
Yeah, them, I guess, yeah. They scorched his entire village. They killed them all. They killed all, and they like his like adopted dad and mom are sitting there as a pile of bones and ash. And he like went back to Obi-Wan, like basically he went for a sandwich and they were out of cheese. And he's like, oh yeah, they killed my whole family. And it was just totally on. And he was like, okay, I'm good now. I'll go with you to wherever they were going. I thought he would have had a little bit more of an aggressive reaction to that one. But honestly, so far so good. I'm locked in. I'm gonna play some video games tonight. Like, and Bree's making a lasagna, which I'm really excited for.
I have lasagna tonight too.
Yeah, I'm really pumped for that.
Gluten free lasagna, but it was amazing. I mean, you can't go wrong with like cheese and you know sauce.
Unless
you don't even know it's
gluten
free.
Intolerant, right?
Yeah, but you don't even know when you have gluten is wheat. It's the noodles. So I have to have specific noodles. No. Are you kidding? What year? It's 2020 and you don't know what gluten is? Get with the program.
We're normal.
Come on. Okay.
No, but I thought it was good. So we're gonna play some vids tonight, and then I'm going to start episode 5, which I'm excited about. I'm making it through. I thought Rogue was excellent. I originally gave it a 7 or 8 out of 10. Sleeping on it and waking up, I actually would upgrade it. I would give that like an 8 or a 9 out of 10. I thought that was really good. New Hope, I'd probably give it like a 6 or a 7. I thought it was entertaining. It was good. I didn't think it was like, oh my God, blow my socks off. But I enjoyed watching that movie. I didn't like find myself picking up my phone to kill time. Like, oh my God, how long is this going to take? I thought that was good. Acting was good. Just a little upset that Luke was so heartless for his adopted family. But the rest I'm happy with. I enjoyed it.
He knew he had bigger things in life. The consensus among, I think, the majority of Star Wars fans is that Empire Strikes Back is the best movie. So that's up next for you. So hopefully you enjoy that. The one thing I'll say about your entire critique
I think 5's the best?
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think most people will say that. That Natalie Portman will now forever be known as just Thor's girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Natalie Portman. I'm really bad with actors and actresses. Yeah.
Cool. I think that's a fair review. Let us know what you think, you know, in the chat or on Twitter or whatever, Connor's reviews. We got a long way to go. If you had started this, you know, a little while back, there'd be less of these to get through, but they keep piling them on now that Disney owns them, so they're just gonna keep going.
I was writing too many Trevor Lawrence stories that are now in the trash.
Yes, well,
we're moving on from Trevor. We're keeping half glass full, right?
We're probably also moving on from the head coach of the New York Jets. That's Adam Gase. We count down to the end. Of course, Monday is known across the NFL after week 17 as Black Monday. Maybe that's the day we find out about Gase. Maybe it's on Sunday night after the game that the official announcement comes. We've talked about that, Connor, about the fact that, you know, the timing is really the only mystery at this point. We'll be back on the podcast to talk about it. But it is a weird place to be in with one game to play against a team that's supposed to be a rival in a lost season when you know the coach is going to be fired. And it's literally just a countdown this week.
Yeah. And but I will say this, like it is a weird situation. It's a situation that a lot of coaches do sometimes find themselves in. Like, I don't think there are that many coaches that can go into week 17 and be like, I'm fighting for my job. You know what I mean? Like, if I win week 17, I'm coming back. Like, maybe if they're on the playoff, like if they get them to the playoffs, but even then, like, I guess you could compare it to the Giants and Dave Gettleman, right? Like, if that team makes the playoffs at 6-10, should Dave Gettleman keep his job as that team's general manager? No, he stinks. The team won 6 games. Like, you got to fire him. So I think that with the exception of maybe one or two of those situations that were out there, it's odd. But what I will say is that, I'm interested to watch how the Jets play this one, and I'm interested to watch how fans watch this game, because it's the first game in a while that you can actually say, without the future in mind, I want the Jets to win a game.
Yeah.
You know, because like when they played the Rams, and really ever since I think that loss to the Broncos, when they lost to the Broncos and Brett Ripon, I think ever since then, you've had to say every time you speak, I don't really want the Jets to win. You know what I mean? Like, because you want them to lose, because losing means Trevor Lawrence. Like, you want them to lose, lose Trevor Lawrence. You want them to lose Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's what you want. And I think for him, like now, because you know you're locked into the number two pick, you can go into this one and say, I actually want to see the Jets win. You know, I want to see Denzel Mims go out there and catch his first NFL touchdown. I want to see Chris Herndon catch five balls for 60 yards and a score himself. Maybe I want to see Sam Darnold, you know, light it up and tear apart the Patriots. And why not beat the Patriots finally? I know they're down and out. Their whole offensive line's banged up. They're going to be starting basically their entire second string linebacking core because they're all hurt. And Cam Newton obviously is not the player that so many people kind of thought he was or was going to be rejuvenated with early in the year. But, I mean, they're still the Patriots. They're still the team that has owned this division the last 20 years. They're still the evil empire. It's still Star Wars reference.
Yeah, yeah. Nicely done.
They're still the Patriots. So, I mean, you want to beat them. So, like, go into this one and have a relaxing Sunday. You know, go out there. You're probably going to be a little hungover from New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, whatever, still, if you're my age now and these things last more than one day suddenly. But you can, like, watch, like get the wings and get the pizza and get a 30 and invite your friends over and watch the Jets and enjoy rooting for a game that they have a chance to win that you want them to win. And yeah, maybe I don't know. I would enjoy that. I'm going to cover this game and finally have a chance of like, oh, you're not. I'm not pre-writing a story about how the Jets have ruined their chances at Lawrence, or I'm not going into this one with my editor saying, all right, well, if they win and the Jaguars win, I'll write this column. When if they do this, now I'm going to write this column. You can actually just cover a game. Like, cover a game for, honestly, the first time since seriously after they lost to the Broncos. Because once they lost to the Broncos was when it was like, oh my God, they might actually go 0-16. Trevor Lawrence is a realistic possibility. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's go for it, and we'll see how that goes. And I mentioned it. One more thing I did want to mention on Gase, sorry, I lost track there, was mentioned the evil empire, and the little shot that Bill Belichick, who I guess we could either call the Emperor or Darth Vader, whichever direction you want to go with that.
Yeah.
He got in there this week when he was asked about Darnold and the Jets, and he said, I don't think you could have anyone better coaching him than where he's at right now. Just like a little twist of the knife by Bill Belichick this week, because he can't resist when he's taking on the Jets.
Yeah, I'll be honest though. I mean, yes, that was probably a little bit of a shot, and I know Jet fans are gonna be like, oh my God.
It was
God,
calculated. How, Let's
it
be
was
honest.
A
that
compliment of Adam Gase. How can anyone say anything positive about Adam Gase? No, he's the Antichrist. Like, how dare anyone compliment this guy? Yada yada yada. But there is a legitimate relationship between Adam Gase and Bill Belichick dating back years and years and years. Like, before Gase actually took a job, I think it was the job with the Broncos, the Patriots wanted him on their staff, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was the job that, like, Bill had called him and, like, offered him, and instead he went to the Broncos. And I remember, like, Gase had made a comment, like, man, like, I'd have, like, 3 Super Bowl rings already if I'd taken that job. Like, it was, like, one of those things. But there's been you can say, like, how they're different people. They're different. There hasn't, obviously, Gase hasn't had the success, yada, yada. But there has been, like, a legitimate respect between Adam Gase and Bill Belichick. Like, obviously, from the Adam Gase standpoint, Bill Belichick's the best coach to ever live. You're obviously going to respect him. But even from the Bill Belichick's, like, there is some admiration and some respect. I don't really always know why, but for Bill Belichick, towards Adam Gase. And maybe it's because of the connection back to Nick Saban. Maybe it's because of the relationship that Adam has with Josh McDaniels. But I mean, there really is one there. It's why, you know, when the Jets claimed Braxton Berrios off the Patriots practice squad a couple years ago, Bill Belichick called Adam Gase and let him know, like, you got a good one. We couldn't keep him because we need a play. We need our fourth wide receiver to be able to do everything. He's got a hamstring issue. We can't put him on IR, so he's got, like, we couldn't keep him. But he called him and said, Adam, you got a good one here. Like, Bill Belichick's not calling, you know, random coaches. He's not calling Pete Carroll to say, you got a good one off our – like, he's calling Adam Gase, though. And that's why you start seeing these reports and these rumors and things circulate about would Adam Gase take the quarterback's coach job for the New England Patriots. And honestly, if he doesn't step aside and he doesn't, like – take a step back and say, I want no this. I want none of that. I want just to kind of just, I want to take 2 years off or a year off and visit training camps and learn more and take this and do that and do this and do that, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. If he doesn't do that and instead he goes like, no, I want to go right back into this. I want to immediately start coaching and I want to do this. I think the Patriots make a lot of sense for him to go there. And that quarterback's coach job would be a good one because he's not going to get an offensive coordinator job after this. Like, that's not happening. Like, he's not getting an offensive coordinator job. He's obviously not going to get a head coaching job. So the next would be a positional coach, would be a quarterback coach. And he has a really good relationship with Josh McDaniels. They've worked together before. He has a relationship with Bill Belichick, even though they haven't worked together before. And for Adam maybe to get his foot back into that door, I think it might give him a chance to reinvent himself and do some more things and try to get an opportunity maybe to then be an offensive coordinator again. But I think that's the best opportunity for him if he wants to be a head coach again, or not head coaching, I'm sorry. If he wants to go right back into coaching again, I think that's the best option for him. What I think the overall best option for him would be, though, would be take a step back. Don't worry about the coaching. Like, enjoy being with your family, enjoying with your kids, kind of travel a little bit. Like, just get away from football, reassess yourself, reassess the way you do things, and then try to get back going again. You know, kind of similar to what Tom Coughlin did way back when. Even Ben McAdoo did it recently. Like, guys that take a year or two off and then go right back. Mike McCarthy, like, do something along those lines, because what he thought would work and the system he thought was impenetrable clearly is broken and it needs to be fixed. And sometimes it takes you stepping away to be able to reassess yourself, reevaluate yourself, do some different things and get going again.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're going to move on to the Sugar Bowl here. First, though, shout out to Wes Masterson, who's always in the chat, but a good one. This may not make sense to you yet, Connor, but he says, Adam Gase is Jar Jar Binks. So
the name sounds funny, so I'm looking forward to this one. Yeah, by the way, I am scrolling through the chat as we speak, and I see that around 6:58 to 7 o'clock, there was a betting going on in the chat about when we were going to start, and I think somebody won like a couple $100. And they're going to drop Venmo or something. They were like, their over under, I think, was set at 7:08. And we got the under because we started at 7:04.
As long as that person lives.
And I were on at 6:50, just so the chat.
Yeah, well, I had this rant. Like,
Connor rolls in around
one of these weeks, we're
going
to just start.
For the record, I was trying to get ready. And I forgot I agreed to do that thing with, how am I supposed to say it? You guys
Nessun.
Said I'm
Nessun.
I had to do a thing with Nessun that
flex.
I forgot I agreed. Yeah, I kind of, sorry. I forgot, yeah. I forgot I had to do it. And I literally had sat down because the PlayStation's here. I haven't really had a chance to play it today. So I was like, wanted to sit down and start NBA and start my guy to make Connor Hughes the two guard who can jump even though I can't jump and shoot threes even though I can't shoot threes and dunk even though I can't even touch the rim. Oh, I can't touch the rim. But I can't dunk. Like all these things, like make that Connor Hughes. And I was about to sit down and start doing it. And then I got the text of, hey, we're going to be calling you in 5 minutes. I was like, oh, shit, I haven't even showered. So I had to take like the sink shower and fix the hair up and I give a comment like Marissa and Tim said the hair is looking good, so I'm happy I was able to piece it together
behind the scenes. All right, let's get on to Justin Fields. And I guess the question here is, because we've talked so much about Zach Wilson lately and how he's kind of jumped up draft boards, including Dane Brugler who really likes him, and he is clearly at this point in the game. Now there's still a lot to be said between now and the draft. Zach Wilson will be in the Senior Bowl, I think. And then there's the combine. There's all sorts of stuff that the jockeying can happen. But as far as in-game action, Friday night is the last chance to see Justin Fields and for him to impress NFL teams, to impress scouts, to impress front offices. And he's doing it against the team that ended his season a year ago in the same spot. It's a rematch of the semifinal from last season, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. These guys have been competitors really since high school, not on the field in high school, but as far as who is rated as the best quarterback in the country. And now at the end of their college careers, They go head-to-head one more time. The doubts for Fields, we've gone over it a lot. It's basically decision-making, Connor. This is going to be a pretty good defense. More importantly, though, that I think for the defensive talent of Clemson, it's the schemes. Because Venable for Clemson just brings so much scheme at you as a defensive coach. That's why he's the highest paid defensive coordinator in the college game. And I think that'll be fun to see how Fields handles that. A year ago, he actually did pretty well against Clemson. We'll see if his kind of regressions this year with decision making can change.
Yeah, it's I think what makes, because we'll go back and forth pretty much over every single podcast for the next 4 months on this, but you know, you can say like, you can say Wilson doesn't play anyone at BYU, and it's a very factual statement. He doesn't play anyone. He played two ranked teams, and they were both ranked, I think, under 18. Like they were not
the not teams power that, five teams.
Yeah, but again, he can only play who he plays. So his performance against the bad teams is noteworthily good. I mean, the throws he makes are holy cow throws, where those would be impressive throws against Alabama, the same as they were impressive throws against UCF, the same as they will be impressive throws in the NFL for whichever team drafts him in the top five, top 10, whenever, wherever he ends up going. But while BYU isn't playing anyone, they're also, in Wilson's terms, he's not playing with anyone. Like, he's not playing with first round pick wide receivers or first round pick tight ends or top 10 offensive linemen. He doesn't have a loaded defense that he knows. Doesn't really matter what he does on offense because the defense only letting up like 10 points today. So he's not permitted that as well at BYU like Fields is at Ohio State. That team is stacked. That team is loaded. So when you see him start to struggle and struggle the way that he did against Northwestern and against Indiana, it's extra alarming because it's almost like the variables we talk about with Sam Darnold where like, oh, he doesn't have receivers. He doesn't have offensive line. He doesn't have coaching. Well, there are none of those variables with Fields at Ohio State. He's got everything working for him. So when he struggles, it's like, why did he make that decision? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? Northwestern and Indiana cannot hold a candle to Clemson. So there is going to be jockeying. There is going to be changing. I remember back when Deshaun Watson was about to enter the NFL draft, his final season at Clemson had him go from undeniable first round pick to what? I remember reading stories about Watson like falling to the late portions of the first round. I watched him in the national championship and was basically like, draft that dude. Yeah. Like, draft him. Like, I was like, not a scout, not breaking the film down, not crunching his footwork. I saw that dude in the national championship game and was like, that dude can play. Get that guy. Go get him. Draft him. He can freaking play. Make him your quarterback. So obviously he still ended up going, I think, middle of the first round, right? Or like not middle, like 10s, 15s, I think, was when the area where Deshaun Watson was picked. I can't remember the exact selection that he was with the Texans, but he ended
12th.
Up.
Oh, yeah, he 12th, went 12th.
Yeah, so like his stock ended up like going back to kind of a little bit, not 1-2, but still like right in that top 12 pick is good. So he was there, and I think the national championship played a big role in that. And I think that the off season with his pro day and the combine and all that helped him as well. So obviously we're going to have a lot of stuff to break down with Fields. But like you said, Tim, like this is one of maybe two final chances for this guy on a national stage with the world watching to make a statement that, forget number two, make a statement you're the best quarterback in this draft. Everyone's talking about Trevor Lawrence. Everyone's going to tune into that game knowing Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick for the Jaguars. Going to be knowing this guy's the generational dude, the killer arm, the this, the that, yada, yada. This is an opportunity for Fields to go out there, put Northwestern in the back of everyone's mind. Like throw it away. Like, just erase it from everyone's minds. Erase Indiana from everyone's minds. Because if he can go toe-to-toe, throw-for-throw, not only with Trevor Lawrence on the other sideline, but against that Clemson defense, not a great elite level Clemson defense, but a very good Clemson defense. That's a big statement. That's a big statement. And it can show that, you know what, maybe, see, this is a problem when you play on a team like Fields does, is that Fields plays on a team that's loaded. So you know you can get away with things. You know that you can swing around, be going down and throw a ball up because you're otherworldly wide receiver, there's a chance he's just going to make a play because he's more athletic than the guy he's going against. There's a chance you can just hold on to the ball forever because maybe you don't think you're holding onto the ball forever. You just assume your offensive line is going to give you 8 seconds to throw because your offensive line has 3 first-round picks on it, you know? So there are things you can get away with sometimes when you know you're good and when you know the guys around you are good, that when you're playing on a team that is not good, you realize you can't get away with those things. So this is an opportunity against Clemson. Like, I don't know if Fields, like, if he throws for 404 touchdowns against Clemson, if suddenly it's like, this guy's the number 2 pick in the draft, done. Like, I don't think that's necessarily the case. But this is a major opportunity, I think, for Fields to have everyone talking about this game and no longer but Northwestern, but Indiana. Because if he comes out against Clemson and he throws 350, 4 touchdowns, makes throws and reads to guys that are covered, because that's the other key thing. I don't want to see him throw 4 touchdowns when there is no defender within 4 yards of the receiver. Like, that's not, you don't gain anything from that. Like, that, it's a wide open guy. He's throwing to a wide open guy. But make the throws, or some of the throws, like we saw from Zach Wilson against UCF. Like, let's see those throws. If he can do that against Clemson, and maybe Ohio State upsets him, or at least they take it down to the wire, I think that will really propel him into suddenly now, yes, he's back in the discussion for number 2. Because I don't, when I think about the Jets drafting a quarterback at number 2, right now I think about Zach Wilson. I think Zach Wilson is the guy the Jets might draft at number 2. I don't think Fields, after what I saw from Northwestern, what I saw from Indiana, I don't even consider him the number 2 pick right now. With a big game against Clemson, he will absolutely be back in that discussion. He will absolutely put himself right back into those talks about this guy could be number 2. However, the flip side of that coin, if he throws for 210, 2 picks, maybe he gets away with a couple where the defender drops balls, but he's still throwing those horrible decisions that he was in Northwestern. Fields in this game against Clemson can also make it so that, no, there's no chance in hell I'm picking him number 2. Like, if he plays poorly against Clemson and he does not have a good game against Clemson, and that decision-making's back and that poor pocket presence is back, and he's again forcing balls and he's again making bad decisions and he's again turning the ball over and he looks rattled and frazzled, then I will be fully comfortable saying no. Like, I'm good. I'm done. Like, he's just not the quarterback for me. So it's a big one. It's a big game, and everyone should be, any Jet fan should be watching this one.
Yeah, big game Friday night, and then less big game on Sunday against the Patriots. All right, let's get into the mailbag. Lots of good questions on Twitter and some in the chat as well. We're going to give credit to Evan Starr for this first one, but this was a popular question everywhere. Will the Jets ownership stick with the current hierarchy, or are they going to actually let Joe Douglas hire the next head coach?
That hierarchy. Okay, yeah. No, Joe Douglas is picking the next head coach. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I'll scream it from the rooftops, and I don't know what you guys want me to do. Like, slap hands and be like that monkey in the tambourine, like just saying it over again. I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would. Again, I would be screenshotted and posted everywhere for you. No, the way that the hiring process is going to work is this. Christopher Johnson will be involved. He'll be in the meetings. He'll be in the discussions. Joe Douglas is going to fill him in. He's going to know everyone that's going in the building, everyone, if they're allowed in the building, everyone is going out of the building, everyone the Jets might want, everyone the Jets don't want, their top order, their pecking order. They want this guy first, this guy second. They might want this guy if he says that. Christopher Johnson's going to be involved in all of those discussions. But it is Joe Douglas running point. Joe Douglas is the one directing the offense. Joe Douglas is the one picking who comes in here. Joe Douglas is the one who's going to be commanding the interviews. He's going to be the one who's organizing the interviews. He's going to be the one that is structuring everything in terms of, like, this is what I want in a head coach. This is what I want to see. These are the qualities. These are the traits. I want him to have this experience. I want him to build a staff with this. It is going to be Joe Douglas's show. This is Joe Douglas's team. Joe Douglas is going to run the draft. Joe Douglas is going to run free agency. Joe Douglas has a blank check for whatever he wants to spend on any player in free agency. He has the opportunity. This is going to be like Washington, where Snyder stepped in and said, draft Dwayne Haskins. And even when the coaching staff didn't want him, this is not that situation. So they're not going to, like, it's not that. It is going to be Joe Douglas doing whatever he wants. Christopher Johnson's going to be privy to everything that's going on. He's going to be involved in everything that's going on, but it is Joe Douglas's show. Joe Douglas is running point. Now, as far as when they said hierarchy, and it's because I was actually just talking to a good friend of mine, Joe LaCalandra, who's a big, big Jet fan. I was just talking to him about it. We went to college together, and we were saying about the hierarchy of, and this is what every Jet fan is so obsessed with, of there's the coach and there's the GM, and both the coach and the GM report to the owner. I haven't checked in yet. It's on my to-do list to start doing my homework on that and checking into it and calling some people that I know to see if there's the chance of that switching. I think there is, because of how much Christopher Johnson trusts Joe Douglas, for better or for worse, I think that there is a chance of that hierarchy. I can't say it's going to change. I can't say it's definitely going to change. I haven't talked to anyone to be able to say like this. I think that maybe it could, but I'll be totally honest with, and I've said this, I don't think that's a big deal. I think people get so obsessed with the coach not being the GM's boss or the GM not being the coach's boss. It doesn't matter. Like if Joe Douglas was Adam Gase's boss right now, Joe Douglas still could not fire Adam Gase without getting approval from ownership. And if Joe Douglas wants to fire the coach, like it doesn't matter. Like it's, there are other teams, like it's a bunch of other teams that are structured this way where it's coach, GM, both report to owner. Like it doesn't matter. There's, if the coach and the owner see eye to eye, there's no issues ever. There's no problems. There's no anything. It's who cares? Like I don't know why people get so angry that the Jets have this organizational structure. I don't, because I don't think it makes that big of a difference. Is there a chance it changes? This is probably the first year where I do believe there is a chance that it does because of how much Christopher Johnson trusts and believes in Joe Douglas. But if it doesn't change, I don't think it's a big deal. I really don't. Like it's if the coach is reporting to the GM, literally nothing's going to change in drafting, free agency, play. Is the GM going to step, like, you really think Joe Douglas is going to step on somebody's toes and say, you have to play this person? No, he's going to say, look, I hired you to be my head coach. You're going to coach the team. Do what you want. This is your team. He's not going to meddle. He's not going to step on his thing. He's going to acquire the players. The coach is going to run it. So who cares if they both report to the owner? They're both going to report to the owner anyway. It's just that you're creating a middleman. You're creating a manager, basically, when still there's the boss. You know what I mean? Like, it's no big deal. Like, if we're in like this same hierarchy, right? And say Marissa's the owner and Tim's the coach and I'm the GM, right? Like,
I like that. I don't think the owner.
Yeah. Right. And we all be fired. I wouldn't even have a GM. Marissa, I'd be the first one axed.
But you're like, never on Tom Coughlin time. That's
right. Yeah. Yeah. Track. Yeah. I'd be totally gone. But like, if Tim's coach, I'm GM, right? And Tim now reports to me. Like, if I want to fire Tim, I still have to go to Marissa. If Marissa wants mm-hmm. to fire Tim, it's still her call. Like who mm-hmm. who cares? Like, I truly believe that it's much ado about nothing. And you can complain and bitch about a lot of stuff with this Jets team. And there are a lot of mistakes you can get angry about. I don't think that structure is one of them. I really don't think it's that big of a deal.
All right. Well, we got a lot more questions to get to. So this one is from Tuna Tucker 1 on Twitter. Is there any chance the Jets use their draft capital and cap space to pry a quarterback away from a team in cap hell or with limited amount of picks? Thinking specifically about Deshaun or Dak.
Oh, Deshaun, no shot in hell either. Those guys are leaving. Deshaun Watson is not leaving Houston. And
Deshaun Jackson probably available.
Yeah, probably. I don't know if he wants to play quarterback though. No, they're not leaving. I would think, like, if you were going to do that, the guys that would immediately come to my mind would be Carson Wentz and Matt Stafford with the Lions. Those would be the two. If you're like a contending team that thinks you're like a quarterback away, Colts, for example, they would be a team where I could see them like going after Stafford. The Jets aren't there. The Jets are looking for the guy that's going to be on their sideline for the next 10 to 12 years. And people this offseason will probably draw some. I know my boy Elliot Shore Parks, who covers the Eagles. We used to work together at the Ledger. He already connected, like, oh, you know, Joe Douglas knows the Eagles. Maybe he'll go mm-hmm. and he'll make a trade for Carson Wentz. No. What the Jets are going to do this year is one of two things. Joe Douglas is going to evaluate these quarterbacks, and he is going to determine what he thinks of each quarterback, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields. If he believes one of those guys is a bona fide, no doubt franchise quarterback, he's going to draft him at two, and he's going to trade Sam Darnold to the highest bidder. If he evaluates those guys and does not believe they are a franchise quarterback or has more concerns than certainties that one of these guys is or is not, like more concerned they're not a franchise quarterback than certainty that they are a quarterback, then he's going to either trade back and recoup more picks and run it back with Sam Darnold and try to build this and add more talent and add more playmakers and all this stuff and then run it back with Sam Darnold, or anything like that. So I don't think that trading draft capital for a quarterback is something that they're considering right now, and I don't think it's something that they should.
All right, up next, this one is from Southern Jet NC. He says, convince me Brian Daboll isn't the perfect choice now that Lawrence isn't a top-tier coaching lure. He's a Jersey guy with family still here, may actually want the job, proven creative big boy NFL play caller, quarterback mentor, kills two birds with one stone as it hurts the Bills as well. And I'll throw this in as well, Connor. If they did hire him, I mean, Joe Douglas and Brian Daboll, they're like separated at birth twins. It would be an amazing situation if those two guys were running the Jets together.
Yeah, I can't convince you that he's the wrong guy to be this team's head coach, because I think that he should. I can't say like, oh, this is why he shouldn't be. I can't say this is why you should have concerns. I can't say this is why there are problems with him, or he has this, or he didn't do that. Because I think if I was making a list of the players or the coaches that should be on the top of the Jets list and the top of the guys that the Jets should consider, I think he's the guy. I think that he is the guy more than Campbell, more than Bieniemy, more than Harbaugh, more than Doug Peterson. He's the guy that to me should be the team's head coach. I think he has the right personality. I think that I love the fact that he's paid his dues, that he's not this like young gun offensive coordinator that had one or two good years and suddenly everyone wants him because they think he's the next Sean McVay. You know, he's well traveled. I mean, he's literally coached at every single AFC East team. So he's gotten a chance to learn under two incredibly successful coaches right now in Sean McDermott the last several years in Buffalo. Bill Belichick, obviously, one of the best. Bill Belichick, obviously, a disciple of Bill Parcells. I mean, there's so much to like about him. And then you can put the cherry on top of it all, which is Josh Allen. So forget, I mean, look at how exciting the Bills' offenses are, right? I mean, the touchdown they scored in the playoffs last year where they're running the passes to Josh Allen, which they've done a couple times this year, the unique runs, the way that everyone seems to be having success there and guys are getting better. You know, Stephon Diggs in Buffalo looks better than Stephon Diggs in Minnesota. And in Minnesota, he was a great player. Cole Beasley was in Dallas. He gets to Buffalo and looks like a better player. John Brown was in Arizona, I believe, gets to Buffalo, looks like a better player. Josh Allen is obviously, like I said, the cherry on top of this, where he shows up in Buffalo as this no mechanics, no technique, just a cannon for an arm, an infectious personality, and a big bulldozer athlete. And this guy's turned him into a legitimate MVP candidate. Like, I mean, and I'll be honest. Like, when you think about most valuable player, I think it's him. Like, if you take him off of Buffalo, yeah, Buffalo is probably a 3-win team. Like, he's that good. I mean, he can throw the ball. He's everything. And I honestly believe he should be MVP, or at least receive several MVP votes. And that's the ultimate builder-upper. That's the fixer-upper project. I mean, he went full Chip and Joanne on his ass and really turned him into an MVP guy. Like, seriously.
I like that, Connor.
Like, he did. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, Bree has me watching a lot of that stuff. But no, like, seriously, like, I think that he is the best coaching possibility for the Jets. And like I said, to me, I see a lot of Bruce Arians in him, where he's a guy that's been the longtime coordinator, really pay to dues, finally gets his opportunity, like Arians did in Arizona. You're like, oh, well, technically in Indianapolis. But you can finally see, like, wow, that guy's got a chance to be a head coach. I think he would be the really perfect one, because there's no nonsense. It's not like he's like the sexy hire where he's, oh, he's the Sean McVay, or, oh, he's the Rex Ryan. You know, it's nothing like that. He's just a good football coach who has paid his dues, knows what he's doing. Like, give him an opportunity. He would be the guy he would be my choice. He would absolutely be my choice. And what he's done in Buffalo, and also the culture that he's been experienced in Buffalo, I think just helps him so much.
All right, this question is from New York sports fan on Twitter. What should Jets fans be excited for this offseason? And what is a realistic turnaround for this team based upon record? And then use Jar Jar Binks GIF for bonus points.
It was included in the Jar Jar Binks tweet. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I don't know who that Jar Jar Binks is, but Tim helped me out with that one.
realistic expectations. I've said this before. I think the Jets are closer to the playoffs than several 7-win teams, than several 6-win teams. I think they're closer to perennial contention than several 9-win teams. I think they're closer to a potential Super Bowl than some teams that are making the playoffs this year. And that's not just with the NFC East in the picture. The Jets have a lot going for them. I personally believe in Joe Douglas. I think they have the draft capital to really turn this around. They have the financial resources to really turn this around. I think their draft class this year has the chance to be pretty good, or looks like it has the chance to be really, really good. I like a lot of what the Jets have going for them. And it was bad this year. At one point, it looked like 0-16. At one point, it looked like 1-15. At one point, luckily, number one pick. Now they might be 2-14, 3-13, whatever. They have the resources, though, to turn this around and turn it around quick. Next year, I think they could win 7 or 8 games. I got to see the team. I got to see what Joe Douglas does in the draft. I got to see what Joe Douglas does in free agency. I got to see what Joe Douglas does here, there. Like, I got to see what they actually do. I got to see him in training camp, see him practice, like, before say, oh, this is an 8-win team. But there's no reason to sell yourself this belief that this team is going to go 2-14, 3-13, 4-12, 5-11, another just slow rebuild. I mean, they have the resources to turn this around quick. And if they hit on their draft picks and they make sign some impact players and make some real, real difference and real change, there's no reason why this team can't win 7 or 8 games next year, maybe even 9. Like, you've seen it happen before. You've seen teams go from worst to first. You've seen teams go from awful to wow, they get on a run. I mean, look at the Bills. Like, who thought the Bills were going to do what they
look
did
at the Dolphins year,
right? The Dolphins, perfect.
They were just
that's even
tanking.
A better reason. yeah exactly. They were literally they were tanking for Tua, like, right. That's literally what they were doing last year, and now that team's in the in contention for the playoffs. And you hire the right guy in terms of coach, you get the right guy under center, you get the right guy calling the shots as a general manager, the one who's acquiring the talent. And there's no reason you can't turn it around quick. So I'm not saying the Jets are going to be a playoff. I don't know what they're going to do in free agency, the draft, and all that stuff. But I would not in the slightest bit say we need, you know, this team, this is going to be a 3 or 4 years. I don't think so. I think they can absolutely position themselves where they're competing for the playoffs next year if they do the right things this offseason. Like, hey, we've talked about it too. We'll use Zach Wilson as an example. So they draft Zach Wilson, right? He's the quarterback. There's a lot of X factors there, but is he pro ready? Is he going to be ready? So we'll say he's not Justin Herbert. Say he's competent, right? Like he's a rookie that can contribute, and he's not going to hurt you his first season. He's not going to be Josh Allen year 3, but maybe he's Josh Allen year 2. You suddenly can then sign Allen Robinson in free agency. His receiving core is Allen Robinson, Denzel Mims, Jameson Crowder. Pretty good, right? Chris Herndon can be the team's tight end still. Say he takes another step, like he gets out of his mental funk, whatever he's been in. You got a competent player there at tight end. Maybe they sign Janu Smith or something like that at tight end. You suddenly have a good group of receivers. They sign Marlon Mack as a free agent. He's not going to cost that much money. He's coming off an Achilles tear. You pair him with Ty Johnson and LaMichael Perine. You sign Brian Daboll. You get the right head coach. You add Joe Tooney in free agency. You then draft another guard. And suddenly you got left tackle Mekhi Becton, right tackle George Fant coming back for another year, Joe Tooney, the guy you drafted, Connor McGovern. That's a pretty good offense. That's an offense that's going to be scoring 20 points a game. That's an offense that's going to get into 30 sometime. That's an offense that when Zach Wilson's rolling, maybe they get to 40. I know that's an alien concept. Defensively, going to take a little more work there, but you see what the Giants did. How horrible was the Giants' defense last year? Look at the Giants' defense this year. They got in James Bradbury. Yeah, they signed that kid from Green Bay, the middle linebacker. But still, Graham has done a phenomenal job with that defense. You can make things turn around. You can make the pieces and make the signings and make it happen. And I don't think the Jets are helpless by any stretch for next year. I'm not saying they're going to the playoffs. I have no idea what this team's going to look like. There's going to be ridiculous turnaround. But they still have a chance to be pretty good.
All right, we got to wrap things up with our picks because it's coming down to the wire. Marissa and I tied after an abysmal 0-3 week by me in week 16. Talk about choking down the stretch. Marissa went 2-1, I think, catch me. So it's tied. Connor has been mathematically eliminated, but we'll let him play
along
anyway.
How great. The best thing of 2020.
I won it last year. Last year's last year. We got to get a championship belt or something. Yeah. We were looking at that for my fantasy football league. They have, like, for $50, mm-hmm. You can get, like, a big tower. We should get that and put, like, the champions' picks on there. We should say, or we get championship rings, yeah. Pick rings, something like that. That'd be fun.
For next year, we'll have it ready, and then we'll back order for the last 2 years. All right, so we'll zip through these because we're running out of time. We'll go Cardinals -2.5. They're taking on the Rams -Goff, so I think they will do that
minus
on the
Goff
road, though.
And Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, So I'll take the Cardinals. I'm not sure why that spread is what it is. The Washington football team has something to play for. That game flexed to Sunday night against Philly. I'll take Washington. -1.5 at Philly. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
So they're the NFC's champs.
Taylor Heinicke.
If
they're going with Taylor Heinicke.
And then finally, I had to do this one. Jets +3 at New England. I'll go with the Jets to at least keep that one tight. Marissa, go ahead.
Okay, so to make this fun and exciting, I decided to make none of the same picks as you. So we couldn't tie or do anything. Well, we could, I guess, still tie.
We
could,
pick into the playoffs? Yeah. Do we do playoff picks? I can't remember what. Oh. Do we do this podcast during the playoffs, don't we?
Yeah.
We just go to once a week?
I don't think we've discussed that yet. Yeah. Vote online now.
I can't remember.
Depending on the Jets coaching search and everything. We'll figuring that out.
I can't remember. But I couldn't remember. I totally blank on this. Did we do a podcast off season last year?
Yes.
I know when we news.
Yes,
ones.
Off season we do it when stuff happens.
Yeah.
We've been getting some pretty good views, which means I think that's probably going to be put on all of our plates. I'm pretty sure that.
Well, I'm taking two weeks vacation in February.
This is like after my vacation. Yeah. After my vacation.
You're going to leave us just the show to Tim and I. It's going to go right to shit. Yeah, I saw that. Like, they're going to look at these views and be like, three times a week in the off season. All right. We're going to be doing full Star Wars breakdowns. We're going to be Star Wars reenactments.
I want no part of that. Okay, my picks. So this game matters until the Washington Football Eagles game at night. So the Cowboys-Giants game, if Washington football team does not win, the winner of the Cowboys-Giants game wins the division. And I got to think the Cowboys are going to pull that one out -2.5. So I'm going Cowboys. Saints -6.5 versus the Panthers, and Seahawks -4.5 versus the 49ers.
All right, Connor, you have 30 seconds.
Yep. I'm in the loser's bracket. I'm going to go with I like the Eagles +1.5 at home over Washington. I don't trust that quarterback as far as I can throw him. And I also believe in Jalen Hurts. I think Jalen Hurts, at least at this point, has the ability to play guys that aren't that good. So give me the Eagles +1.5. I will take the Cowboys. I think they're going to beat the Giants. The Giants' defense is good, but I don't think the Giants' offense has the ability to go score for score with those three Cowboy receivers. Zeke is getting healthier, and Andy Dalton's playing some good football lately. Maybe a veteran groomer for a Jets rookie quarterback. I would keep an eye on that one. But I'll go with the Cowboys -1.5. And for my
-1.5? I had that at 2.5.
2.5, 2.5, yeah.
Oh, it's down to 1.5, so that means I'm on the wrong end of that thing. It's flipped. That means the score is flipping towards the Giants. And then I'll go with Jets +3. My last pick of week 17. I'll go Jets. They finally snapped that losing streak to the Patriots. Last one. I remember the game so vividly. I actually saw it come up on my. I remember I had the video from the press box of Decker catching the touchdown to beat the Patriots way back when it looked like the Jets might be going to the playoffs. The last playoff run and competent, meaningful December football I've covered. Oh no, I shouldn't say that. I covered the Giants playoff run and the Eagles playoff run. So that doesn't count.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Final episode of 2020. Thank goodness for that.
What's your New Year's resolution, real quick? Any New Year's resolutions?
To be a great podcast host.
Mine is to unplug a little more. To not be on Twitter too much.
Did you watch social media?
No, I did not. And I know that I'm like the biggest. They probably have me on there, so... Yeah.
I told Brie I could give it
up. I have Twitter in my hands 24/7. Yep, I can't get off of it. It's horrible.
I can give up Instagram.
Yep.
I give up Instagram and Facebook easy. Yeah. TikTok could be tough because it's just funny. I love TikTok.
Yeah.
Okay,
let's end on that.
But I do love TikTok. Oh, it's very funny. They're very good.
I've pretty much
Twitter. I could not give up Twitter.
Yeah, I couldn't give up Twitter.
Because I just need the information. And I need, like, for work. Like, it's there. I need it. But the TikTok was like the one I would tough because I like that for fun reasons. Like that one would be tough. As Instagram, Facebook be easy to quit. I'd be easy to give that one up.
Yeah.
All right, one more day to take advantage.
I don't know what my resolution is though. I decide. I don't know.
Okay. I haven't figured. We gotta go, Connor.
I gotta think. I'm gonna pop on Birds with Friends and tell them my New Year's resolution.
Okay.
All right, one more day to take advantage of our holiday deal at The Athletic or theathletic.com/thecantwaitpodcast. If you gift a subscription, you get a subscription for free. That is through New Year's Eve. So one more day to take advantage of that. We'll talk to you again in 2021, a bright new future for the New York Jets coming up.